This week, we gather at Sanctuary Mount to celebrate the bicentennial anniversary of our grand opening of the Jedi Outpost on Quen. This is, of course, a reference to events that unfold in the latest Star Wars novel, Star Wars: The Living Force, by John Jackson Miller, which we review alongside the latest episode of Bad Batch on this week's episode of Cantina Chronicles.
Ben.
And we are here, as always, to talk about the latest news in Star Wars. Films, streaming shows, books, games, collectibles, everything you can think of. We'll probably cover it at some point or another on this show. This week we gather to celebrate the bicentennial anniversary of our founding of the Jedi Outpost on Quen.
Yes.
I hope you have a refreshment in hand, because we are here to celebrate today.
And all we're going to talk about is Yarl Poof. But anyway.
There'll be lots of Yarl Poof talk.
Mm-hmm.
We also got episode 13 of The Bad Batch Season 3, Into the Breach. Yep. Looking forward to talking about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. You guys want to start with Bad Batch? Just get into it? Or? You want to start with?
Let's. I've got these clearance codes
for
Imperial Station 003. And I think we've got to intercept some knowledge here. We gotta get some intel, and we gotta get our guy Echo back on the scene. So
big Echo episode, man. He was a boss in this episode, which made me kind of worry about him a little bit.
Right?
For his safety.
Yeah.
But
I was like, Echo's back, but protect at all costs. Mm-hmm. Protect him.
Is he secret? Is he safe?
I mean, if you're going to, I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like they got to lose someone. If they're going to lose someone, I mean, it's got to be Echo, right? Like, come on.
Yeah.
Not an original Bad Batcher.
For people that are, if we're dancing around this, it was just like last season, they were like really pumping Tex tires the whole season about how cool he was. And then they offed him. And so we're worried about that happening to our boy Echo. I think maybe it was just I'm hoping this is me being hopeful. They're just like, you know who's cool? Echo's cool. Like, this was kind of his mission. He was calling the shots and Hunter was standing back. You know, he had to make he went out on a solo mission here. It's just like reminding, like, you know who's awesome? Echo. Like, he was a shock trooper, right? Like the highest highest rank you can, the most elite of the clones. And survived, you know, a mangling, but he's still that guy. He's still him.
And it would have felt weird if it was just Hunter and Crosshair with Rampart. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it kind of made sense that there was a third.
Yeah. Well, you got Wrecker too, obviously.
Yeah, but Wrecker can't like go in undercover. That man is incapable of being undercover.
I know. Did you catch like him like looking at his iPhone next to the ship?
Mm-hmm.
He was just like kicking it. It was like
just
such a
hanging
cool
out
scene. You know,
just
like
when the guy
back.
Comes just puts his helmet on for a second just to play the part, like just like
it looked so natural, but mm-hmm. it was like you're not because it just looks like anyone looking at their phone like going through it, and that's, but he had like, it was a chunky piece
was
of
so
gear
funny.
That he was like scrolling through.
Yeah, that was too funny.
Yeah, I gotta say,
lighting was incredible. In that scene,
like,
too.
Yeah. It's just amazing in the show. I gotta say, I think I was maybe the hardest on the last episode, episode 12, because it felt like a moving chess piece is spinning wheels. And you could argue that similarly, this was that type of episode. But boy, did I feel almost the exact opposite way about this episode.
Super
and I think
fun.
It's something about a base infiltration where I'm like, you do that. Like, you're Star Wars. Like, you're golden, right? To be sneaking in to steal something, like, you're fine.
I took a million notes when I rewatched this thing yesterday, and I mean, it feels like high Star Wars to me. Like, this is, it has the cinematography, the score is amazing. I had this loud tonight, last night, and the shots, like, I mean, that's the cinematography, right? But like the looking down shot on Mount Tantus, and then it cuts to inside the vault, and it's like the same layout. It's like,
oh, that was some super depressing stuff, though. That was tough just to see the kids just trapped in this metal chamber. That was brutal.
No, but it's like they've got hope.
A lot
now.
Of meaningful moments from this episode, though, like when Emery Carr's like, "I'm the chief scientist now." I was just like, that was the most Captain Phillips moment of the entire show. That was incredible. When Omega's like, "I have good news. I've escaped this mountain before." I was like,
Omega's the boss in this episode. I'm just like, no worries. Like, just completely just looking like a pro in this whole situation. And watching the kids just suddenly have hope again was kind of fun.
Yeah. I mean,
That was fun. That was good.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously to show the growth, right? Like, now we're in season 3. Like, when we first met Omega, she was essentially these kids. She was just like, I mean, except relatively happy, just doing her thing, doing her experiments, like, and not really any idea about the larger world. And now here she's this emboldened, young woman.
The Rampart, storyline so far has been super fun.
Yes.
Sort of bringing him back into the mix, seeing how he manipulates the rank and file of the Empire, which is like, apparently you can just say, my soldiers and my mission are classified, and if you have any questions about it, contact Governor Tarkin, and you can pretty much get away with anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know. He's a fun character.
He's a fun character, and they're doing something different with him than, like, I was a little worried when they reintroduced him that they were going to do something similar to the names escape me, but from Rebels, the one who ends up being
the
undercover
female governor.
No, the mutton chops guy who's the bad guy.
Callus.
Yeah, Callus. Because, like, which I like that character, but I'm like, are they going to do the same thing? But I like the fact that with Rampart, he's not coming to the light side.
Yeah.
He's completely in and of itself. Like, that whole, like, how can I trust you? Like, back and forth was kind of great. Of like, well, we have to, like, neither of us, you have to trust both of us. But it was a nice little moment.
Yeah, it was a really nice little moment there with him. He's got some funny bits. And him just like them having to trust each other, and like Crosshair's all in now too.
I love hearing Crosshair say, "You have to trust us." I was like, yikes.
Yeah. Oh my God. Or actually, my line of the day was "Relax, echoes on it."
Nice. Yeah, the Crosshair. Yeah, we got to get all the Crosshair samples down.
Can we do a really quick Bad Batch members ranking right now? Like your faves, faves.
Yeah, fine. Let's go. Fire it off.
Do you want to just go? Everyone gives their. I guess it's top four now. I guess Omega's in there, so that's five. Hunter, Crosshair, Wrecker. Does Echo count? Echo's in the batch. He's an OG member of the batch. And Omega.
Sure. He has the armor.
Yeah.
He has, like,
all right.
Yeah, he's not really, I mean, he was introduced in season 7 of Clone Wars. It was kind of with the batch, and I don't know, maybe he's just a tag along. Anyone want to go first?
I mean, it's probably Tech at the top.
Okay, I was going to say Living.
Then it's probably...
Yeah, so Tech still counts because he's definitely living.
Crosshair,
fair.
Wrecker, Echo, Hunter. Like, Hunter is the most uninteresting to me. I don't know why. I just feel like he is just the thread the needle commando who's just going to, execute the mission, at the best ability that any of them have.
Yeah.
Basically unlock any moment and sort of solve the crisis. And I don't know. He's a great character, but I don't know. He's not as interesting in terms of the storytelling.
Someone's got to be last.
Tech.
Wait, but you didn't say Crosshair, did you?
No, Crosshair's two for me.
Oh, two. Okay. So one more time. Tech, Crosshair, Wrecker.
Tech, Crosshair, Wrecker.
Omega.
Echo Hunter.
Oh, Echo Hunter.
Oh, If Omega's, I guess Omega's batch. So I guess Omega's. I guess I got to go Tech. Tech. Omega, Crosshair, Wrecker, Hunter, Echo.
Okay.
Or Echo Hunter, sorry.
Yeah, pretty close to mine. I'm going to go Omega, Crosshair, Wrecker, Tech, Hunter, Echo. And Echo is much further down because he's just a poor man's
Tech.
Lobot?
Did you say Lobot? What did you say? Tech.
I mean, I will say
what? He's got like the cool cybernetics. And his helmet design. Put him up with everyone. Love
he
Hunter
is the best.
Just because the helmet design alone was like a 10.
Yes, exactly. Best armor, I think, out of all of them.
Armor. Like,
yeah,
so high.
I'm just
aesthetic.
Crosshair shot up for me. Like, I've been on the journey with him and he had some bad times. But I'm rooting for Crosshair.
He's high on my list.
He's number one for me now. I think you said the same, didn't you, Adam? You said Crosshair first.
Omega first. Omega, but like it's real close. So just Omega because to make that kid character, then like the character development.
Yeah.
And that's also why, like, similarly, my Crosshair is so high up for me. Like, I'm looking for his character development in my shows.
The Shadow
and those
Trooper
two
reveal
characters.
Is that it's Tech, though, Adam. Won't Tech then shoot up?
Tech will skyrocket up past, I don't know, past Crosshair, but definitely, and Wrecker, I just enjoy for character, for comic relief.
Yeah.
Like, I always like my comic relief character, but yeah, I don't know.
Definitely.
Yeah, Tech will be up there if he's the Shadow Trooper.
Yeah. I think I like Crosshair, Echo. Omega, Wrecker, Hunter, Tech, because Tech's been really dead for a season, so it's really kind of fallen out of favor. Yeah,
that's
he's not
fair.
Exactly getting the scene time anyways, and unless he's that elite trooper, and even if he is, I hope for better from him. I would think he would find a way to override his cybernetics and
his brain. That's going to be the scene where he just kind of
like he gets
clicks
shot
over
or something, and his programming comes back, and then
just some blunt force trauma to the head or something.
Just finds some nerdy goggles to put on and just immediately puts them on, makes them out of scraps. Cool. I just want to see where y'all stand on that because I'm really, I don't know. I just
so far the Force kids are all right, so I'm happy.
Yes, I think they're gonna be. I think they're in good hands. Unless they all die during this escape and it's a final lesson for Omega. You know, I don't know. That'd be dark. I don't think they're going to do that. But like, no. They set it up so well because it's such a... Like, can you think of another show where you saw a child watch their parents get killed in front of them and stolen away? Like, you're not supposed to put that on TV, I don't think. Like,
wait,
it's
are
so
the
dark.
Clone the clone escapees still out in the jungles?
No, they're with... Like... They were on Pabu.
Are there other clone escapees, though?
Mm-hmm. Not that we've met.
No.
But I remember seeing them two or three episodes again on the assault on Pabu. They were helping to organize.
Yeah, they were hanging out with Pabu because I saw... What's
anywhere
this?
Is better than Tantus.
pretty much.
Yeah, but no, loving Omega. I love seeing her emboldened here. Yeah. Drawing the animation of her is amazing. Her hair looks
she
amazing.
Looks so much older, and I know she hasn't aged that much and kids age fast, which I know, but like just it feels like there's a lot of miles on that kid, right? Like like a lot of it seems like she's parentified at this point, which is
I like that this is a great kids adventure story too, which is like she's gonna escape. Basically, she has all this training with this commando squad,
right?
Yeah,
and she's now going to use all these tactics to escape this kind of small scale, you know, prison. Essentially, it's sort of it's a prison break scenario, but
one way out.
It's fun. Yeah. It's kids, and where do you get this? Yeah. You know, it's super. It's not really a thing that's out there. You don't really these movies aren't. Though. You can't really justify a cause for making a movie.
That's
like
true.
This, really,
yeah.
Kids one way out, and the one thing the Bad Batch didn't teach her was how to swim. I was gonna
they did teach her how to swim. She's very well-rounded young lady.
She is,
I really like
part of what
I was gonna say
part of like building off that, what I want to see almost is that they spend the next episode getting there, kind of like trying to like get into around Tantus, but by the time they actually get there, she's completely escaped. It's more of like, I'm here for my great
again,
here's my ride.
That's like, what happened. That's how the season started, right? She like they were trying to find her and she escaped before they could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that'd be kind of funny if that happened again.
I
am really liking the Omega Dr. Emery conversations.
Yes.
They're really loaded conversations because you can like, this finally Omega's like, you know what you're doing to children, right? And she knows that Emery has a conscience and is,
well,
you
know, yeah. Especially with the doll, right? Like that little moment of her seeing that she had given the doll to the other captive was a nice little like, oh, yep, it's working. I'm winning her
over.
But
she's also giving them free time in the room, right? Because there's a scientist next to Emery who's just like, you shouldn't allow the specimens to speak to each other or something.
Mm. Yeah.
And it was like, and she's like, I'm the chief scientist now. And so it's like, she is the nicest scientist there, it seems. And so it's like, she's probably going to have a change of heart entirely and save these kids. Like, that's kind of what's being foreshadowed here.
Anyone catch the name of the scientist that was calling out Emery?
No.
It's, what was the name? Dr. Skulder, which is a
Scully and Mulder. I did catch that, Ben, and I was like, it can't be Skulding, like the guy from Chandrilla on Andor. Like, it can't be.
Oh, no.
They're of no relation, right?
I don't know. She was a fascinating character, though. I think they just made that name. I saw
it's on brand, though, for a Skuldrin to be like, at this, black site science facility. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I was thinking like X-Files, Scully and Mulder.
Right. Portmanteau.
Yeah. And then, she could be living an incredible life. But here she is finding the alien hideout, really living there. She was fun. Sorry, I guess that.
Where's the X-Files of the Jedi Order?
Right.
Where's that show?
Right.
Whereas, like, we don't know what this is. It entered the galaxy. It's Yuuzhan Vong. It's a Yuuzhan Vong craft.
There's room.
That was basically what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Wait, there's people on other planets? That's really kind of funny. Be like, we all know each other.
That's the one.
Break the story. We got 30 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
No. This episode was great. I really, really liked it. I feel like it's going to be exciting to see what happens next. Tantus Cannon is just so fun.
Yeah.
Like, even the beginning of these episodes, like, just how cinematic they are, like, especially this one with just the shots of Tantus and the score. And I was just like, this is awesome.
It is. They really stepped it up this year.
Yeah. It's how much that Tantus, like, looms large in, like, old lore in EU. It's kind of, every time they cut to it, I'm like, I get to see it. Like, it's just
feeling. It's like, whoa. I know. This is this is site zero for cloning. This is like this is where they really started doing all the projects.
Yeah.
I imagine. There's probably another location, but it's.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like it if there's just like more secrets than you could even, think about in there, and they kind of left it secret. But I mean, it'd be nice to know what's in those creches that we were looking at.
Like, what did Palpatine come see? Like, we have to have that has to be answered, basically. Like, what did he come look at?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the last scene of the show, probably. But
yeah,
I don't know. Could be anything. But yeah, this episode had everything. There was like a really nice astromech bit in there. It was short, but it was funny, and it was cool to see astromechs being astromechs. With like the suction cup, like sucking them into the ship, and then the mouse droid came last and had to go a little lower to pick up the mouse droid. I don't know. I just love that bit.
That was so cool.
It's just like checked all the
great
boxes.
Mouse droid moments.
Yeah, it was an adventure. There was kids. It's like one of those ones that just checked all the like pillar boxes.
Wait, the ending was awesome. Exactly. The ending where he basically like sticks the ship to the shuttle to the Imperial cruiser and it blasts off into hyperspace.
Yeah,
was. So cool.
I'm dubbing that the Hunter maneuver. Is that okay? Is that too boring?
Yeah,
can we call that the Hunter maneuver?
Yeah.
I mean, because
that
was an awesome scene. I mean, that was maybe Hunter's coolest scene in like all season. Like, and he was just like, nope, I'm going for it.
It was very Interstellar. It was like matching the rotation. Yeah. It's like, let's go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Rad.
Very good stuff.
Rad. Well, that's awesome. Three more episodes, I guess, to go on this bad boy.
Should we jump to the gem cities of Quen? Or
yes, let's go. The Gem Isles.
All right. Well,
Mound Isles.
This week we reread The Living Force by John Jackson Miller, and just a superb entry into the Star Wars novels that are the kind of standalone novels that are out there looming as great stories. This was just spectacular. I think we're just going to do kind of a part one review, and then I think we'll probably like do our reflections on another podcast where we kind of look back at it, especially when we watch, we're going to, I think, marathon the films on May the 4th. So
yeah,
we'll be revisiting the prequels, and I think we'll want to discuss this book even further when we do that. And so, but firstly, I just want to like dive into kind of like, you know, overall impressions of the book. Like, what did you think, Adam, of this book from John Jackson Miller?
I was expecting a lot of things from this book, and it did not disappoint. What I was not expecting was, I would almost put this in the comedy section of a in a good way. Like it was funny as hell. And part of that was listening to the audiobook. If you listen to the audiobook version of it,
it's really funny.
It's really funny, and not and like really smart funny, like in terms of just a lot of character observations, a lot of just like getting to know each of your Jedi Council members and their weird quirks. And it's just kind of great. There's a part where I know, you know, Ben's going to get there, but a major plot point hinges on Yoda's the Yoda's funny way of talking. Like, literally, oh, yeah. It's like one of the best moments where I'm like, Seki steps up, I'm like, oh, it's to the mic. I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. The way to like circumvent this this dastardly plan is just to have Yoda talk. It's kind of amazing. But it was funny, but also really great. And then it was funny, and then the bad guy is pretty bad. And then we can talk about her.
Zelestra. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of star power in this one. It's like, okay, every council member just like plus Qui-Gon, yeah. And like heavy Qui-Gon. I mean,
so much Qui-Gon
and Obi-Wan. But like, Grant, what did you think about like, this is your guy being the guy for a whole book and like actually like,
oh yeah, this was doing this is thing. Sort of all the validation you want about yeah. Qui-Gon's whole belief in the living force versus the cosmic force, which Miller quickly sort of explains to you what that dichotomy is
right from the jump. Very quickly, yeah.
Which is that the cosmic force is about thinking about all people in the future and their well-being in the future, whereas the living force is about thinking about all people's well-being in the present. And it's like literally the dichotomy, like in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And this book is all about helping those in need in the present, seeing what that rewards. It rewards prosperity and upward trends in sort of socioeconomics and can save an entire planet, basically. And that's kind of what this book covers in such a really beautiful, remarkable way. And it's sort of, if you read this book and then watch the prequels, you'll have so much more context for sort of the relationship that's there between the council and Qui-Gon, where it's not just, he's just an outcast sort of Jedi on a limb who, you know, sort of believes in his own dogma and creed about the order and things like that. It's more of like a lot of the Jedi council actually believe in Qui-Gon and what he has to say is actually incredibly important to the council at all times. And you forget that in this book. And I think I don't know. I thought that was awesome. That was really cool.
Yeah. It's kind of beautiful that he has like one sentence, basically just help one person. And then like, that's enough to get the entire Jedi council off their butts.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts with so much bureaucracy. All it's
so true.
That's what it took to get Mace to make those decisions. Is that who you face? And you always face Mace when you're in the circle, when you're in the Jedi Council?
Well, they say, in this book, it's explicitly said that he sort of is the, I guess, the warden of the Jedi traditions, right? Like he's the protector of their traditions, and because he believes the traditions have a lot of value and sort of steering them. Yeah.
Yeah. I found it interesting. There was a line, I don't know if it was from Ki Adi Mundi, I don't remember. But they talked about how there used to be factions. They would sort of say the council had its own faction. So sort of like if you're reading Wheel of Time, how like the Aes Sedai. They have their colors and each one sort of has a speciality. But it's much more informal on the council, but it does seem like they do select people to try and they go for diversity. Like they're trying different schools of thought, different, you know, ways to think about things, mental organization, focus, and like attention. Like Evan Seen or whatever, like how did that guy make the council? Like He just like fixes cars.
Evan Peele?
Oh, like, Evan Peele. Greatest, yeah.
The guy who's concerned about education on Quen.
Well, that one was amazing.
I thought about Adam in those scenes where he's just like, all right, you guys all have to get off these streets and we got to fix this education system.
No,
I was like,
Peele was amazing. The, sorry, I guess it wasn't Eeth Koth. It's the guy that's with Plo Koon. Oh, Sessie Tin.
Oh, Sessie Tin.
Sessie Tin.
Yeah. What
Sessie
a fantastic Tin. Sort of insight into his character, right? Like,
yeah,
he basically is the ship mechanic, essentially.
Yeah, character, but he's on the council.
He's a starfighter pilot, yeah. Like first and foremost.
Apparently, yeah, it ends up being like a taxi driver in this and whatever. But yeah, I don't still quite even by the end of that book going, okay. I mean, I guess it's a diverse perspective on the council.
Yeah, but I'm like, what is this guy like? He's not a leader in any way. He doesn't even like people. Like,
I thought that's what made him so good, though, is because he's always tinkering and working on cars and speeders, and so he doesn't have to like get his hands dirty and kill people or like fight or anything like that.
And I guess
clean from it.
And I guess that's a diverse opinion. Like, he's going to come at you with like a pretty interesting perspective based on someone, but it just seems like he has a very small world. He's like, I fix racers, I learned how to fight with a sword, I became a Jedi, and then I fix racers. And like, that's my whole story.
Yeah.
And it was like, I mean, he was being self-deprecating, but I was like, okay, so why are you here? But that was my one note about Sessie Tit. Like, it's just like, it's a wild, like, yeah, it's a wild group.
He's there to temper sort of some of the discussions. I've noticed when he's there, he's like, we can't do that, we're already doing this. Yeah. Like, he's that guy.
Yeah. Right. Very practical, pragmatic. Yeah. Yeah. Addie Galea is like the legal department. She's like,
right.
Like diplomacy. Right.
Well, she's the one that's like, she tracks all the like communications and like all the movements and all the like the day to day, like the crunching numbers in the galaxy. And she's in every meeting taking notes. And she's like, I don't know. She just feels like legal. It's like,
yeah, he was with her at one point in some park. And he's like, she's good at both diplomacy and combat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget. Like, I know what she looks like. In this book, I kept forgetting that she existed. And they actually addressed that towards the end of the book. So I'm like, oh, good. I kind of was supposed to. Like, there's a Yoda moment between her and Yoda. Which was basically,
yeah, like, they do a Yoda and her sort of. So, like, what they do is they pair up the Jedi. What John Jack Miller does is pair them up.
Yeah.
And it's so cool to see those dynamics, basically. Yeah. It's really neat.
Yeah, so yeah, it was, yeah, Galea and Yoda were the ones together.
I think Jarl Poof and Ki-Adi Mundi were like my favorite. Some of my favorite.
Oh, all I want. Every time it would come back to them, I'd be so happy. I'm like, this is like your comic relief of the entire thing. And like, Jarl Poof is just as I love the fact that he's just like, Ki-Adi's like, you've changed. He's like, yeah, I'm old. I'm bored. I decided to be like, I decided to be a prankster for the last century because what else am I going to do? Like,
right. Exactly. Like, what am I going to do to myself? He just got weirder. Yeah. That guy like witnessed the whole like Nihil invasion. And like, that was like, I mean, that was like a blink of an eye for that dude. And he's just like rolling on the floor laughing like about everything. Just
right.
Yeah.
I guess you got it right. If you're not laughing, you're crying. Right. And like that's
like a
there's a moment at the beginning
too. Like,
he is. He's really good at Jedi mind trick. Which is like, I love that it's his favorite thing. And there's that fun thing
they
at the beginning where he's
with
the younglings. Yeah.
With the people, the mobsters in the street, the gang or whatever, the skulls.
Oh, I forgot about that. He just kept mind tricking him over and over and over again.
Yeah. Can we talk about some of the pirates here? Like, well, the overall story, basically, this kind of this pirate queen, Zelastra of the Riftwalkers, wants to take out the Jedi High Council because of, you know, past, you know, engagements with the Jedi long ago, and sort of that, you know, shading how she sees them today in the time of this book, and wants to take them out. And there's lots of pirate factions, the sort of real deep exploration of the underworld in this book, which I thought is so important, because I feel like that's maybe one of the mechanisms that we know Palpatine is playing with right before the prequels begin, is that there's industry, you know, and then there's the underworld, right? And it's he's playing all these different levers. But it's so cool to sort of get this exploration of pirate culture and like sort of the slice, which is an area of space that's just on the edge of Hutt space, essentially. And it's kind of the furthest reaches of the Republic. That was so cool. But so we have the filthy credits.
Yep.
Led by Chief Executive Darwo. Then we have the Poisoned Blades, led by Venom V. The Staved Skulls, led by the Eviscerator. Yeah.
The Eviscerator.
And the Vile. Who the Vile's leader, I guess, keeps changing. And Bobo
Keeps changing. I think they can't keep.
He killed Bobo killed the last guy.
Yeah. And I was like, Boba?
Yeah, yeah. No, Bobo. And everyone laughs at him. They're like, what kind of stupid name? The Rodian. That was
just awesome. And I love Zelastra as a character. And then a big part of this book is, what's her name? Kyla? Kyla Lomada, I think.
Yeah.
The stowaway kid character that's basically Deepa Balaba, which we haven't even mentioned Deepa Balaba,
right?
Which is, we're basically burying the lead because this is kind of her book in a major way, I would argue. Just given that, like, she's the council member that gets to have, like, the coolest sort of mission.
Yeah.
Like, getting close to the villain, all this sort of stuff, as all the other council members are just dealing with, you know, a island chain that's basically falling to you know, high crime rate, you know?
Yeah.
Deepa Balaba is the youngest council member in Jedi history.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I was, clicking around.
Oh, I thought that was...
It might be retconned now of change. I don't know if they've updated Wikipedia yet, too.
Well, I mean...
Vanessa Rowe is not a
council member.
No, who am I thinking of?
She's a master.
You know what I'm surprised about? There's not like some elder council. They have like council
Keep
members talking. That are like hundreds of years old. I'm like, where's like the elder council?
Yeah. Well, they want to get some, you know, age mix in there.
Because like a few of them are like, before you speak, know that we're 400 years old. Like this happens a couple times in the book, too. It's like Jarl Poo.
Apo Rancisis.
Rancisis. They're like, all right.
Yaddle.
Now, before you say anything, just know this. Seneschal Vo is 300 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever that... Oh, so that's a new character, right? Seneschal Vo?
Yeah.
The Bim? I think it's called a Bim.
Bim.
And their language is Bimini?
Yeah.
And they're like a little mouse? I thought of you, Ben.
Yeah.
I was like, is this Audrey?
It's a character? Audrey the caretaker? Maybe.
So, update on Deepa Balaba. She is not a council member at the end of this book, but she is before episode one, because she's there. She's at the council.
Said she was on the council. Like that's the way he was talking about her.
So I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that, but she's definitely on the council. Deepa Balaba is on the council and was considered the youngest at a time. But I think they may have retconned that since with the High Republic.
Right. But she was Mace's Padawan way back in the day, which is exciting. Mm-hmm. We know she lives to become the master for Caleb Doom, a.k.a. Kanan Jarrus.
Yep. Somewhat hinted at towards the end of this book where she's like, I think I might take on another apprentice at some point.
Dun, dun, dun.
I wonder who that could be.
New Dawn. New Dawn, also written by John Jackson Miller.
That was a good book.
How poetic is it that, isn't it stated pretty early in the book that Deepa Balaba basically gave orders to Zeren Rel, like another Jedi, check out like pirate activity in the slice or something, and then they died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the fact that Kanan lives, like the fact that she pushes him to live in that moment, where it's like, that is such beautiful symmetry.
That is very, that's great symmetry. Books,
She knows what it's like to lose it wasn't officially a Padawan.
Yeah, she's like, Kanan's only alive because she's like, get out of here. Like, she needs him to live. She can't have another Jedi die on her watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a big crux of the book, and we can talk about this when we revisit this book or some of the themes of this book after, you know, in a later episode, but like, the end of this book really centers around the idea of attachment. Yeah. There's active discussions about attachment between Deepa and Mace at the very end that are really important, and Qui-Gon's brought into the mix. And like, I just want to take the last quote from Qui-Gon Jinn and plast it anytime if I was ever to write anything about the Jedi, it would be my number one quote about attachment. And I'm like, please, whoever's writing the Rey movie, take this into account.
Well, I wonder if they're figuring it out. And Adam, I think you should read it. I mean, because I got to this quote, which was...
Yeah, let's just put a spoiler wall up here. We're going to spoil some quotes that are late in the book now. So,
yeah.
I think I have that one if you don't have it, Adam.
Yeah.
I don't have it like directly in front of me.
Well, I have one that was sort of... I think they were probably just entering into these real deeper conversations about attachment. But Kylo shook her head. Yeah. I think this is when... Deep is getting interrogated and is about to die, she thinks. And Kylo shook her head. She goes, I'm glad I'm not a Jedi. Deepa thought it was a strange statement. Why? I don't think I want to trust the judgment of anyone who isn't tied to other people. And I was like, okay, I'm like, that kind of makes sense. So it's like, what are you, you know, this is one of those like core questions that I think about every night before I go to sleep about Star Wars is sort of just like, so what's the deal here? Like, what are we going to do with this attachment thing? Because we know you don't have it right. So what's the answer there?
Yeah. And then finally, I think Qui-Gon says at the very end of the book, spoilers, attachment is not the problem. Indifference is. And that's it. It's just that simple. And then obviously, you know, he follows that by saying, you know, save a friend, Obi-Wan, and a friend may save you. And I was like, and sort of that is actually really, I think, answering what Lucas sets up in the prequels, essentially the banning of attachment, the secret marriage, the secret life that Anakin's leading, all that sort of stuff. You kind of want like more commentary on that and why all that was so repressed to the point where it caused Anakin to go astray, and you want to figure that stuff out. And I feel like Qui-Gon was sort of the missing link, or just this belief system that like attachment's not the problem. It's not that they shun attachment, if you do have attachments, you can't then become indifferent about those attachments. You have to put your 110% into every attachment until it's remedied and doing well, and so it's almost like you're almost committing. It goes to like utilitarianism and all this sort of stuff, right? Of like, you're committing like negative action. It can be committing, you know.
Yeah.
So,
but it's the living force, right?
Right.
It's the living force. The living force is about really the individual and individualization and seeing about individual relationships. And Qui-Gon is a firm believer in. I think that's what words in his mouth, but if you focus on the living force, everything else will take care of itself, right? Is that that's the whole thing. And that's why, I mean, Qui-Gon's my number one and taught Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan tried to balance that a little bit and I think got into it. But at the end of the day, I don't want to pull on this thread, but I really don't think Anakin would have fallen to the dark side if Qui-Gon was his master, because Qui-Gon was equipped to discuss attachment and have Anakin be truthful about attachments. And, you know, we talked a lot about it, but I hearing that discussion, there's moments in this book where Mace tells Deepa Balaba basically like, no, you can't, I don't care about the girl. Like, the girl's not important. The mission's important. To which Deepa Balaba is like, yeah, but you didn't have to come in and try to save me. You could have just blown everything up. So like, you're full of blank as well. Like you're attached to me. Like, there is attachment here. Like, we can't just pretend we're not we don't have attachments. So,
yeah.
There's, I just want to run with this thought experiment. Cause I mean, we've mentioned this before that, you know, Qui-Gon would be an entirely different master for Anakin. But specifically what this book made me think a lot about is the fact that Qui-Gon didn't free Anakin's mother from slavery.
Right? I know.
And I'm like, you know, I mean, listen, Qui-Gon's awesome, but like that, and then no one after him did either. I mean, Obi-Wan, I guess he wasn't on the ground with them for all that, but you know, why didn't they do that? Like, because that slot means like, if you're really worried about your attachment with your Padawan and, you know, you care about that living force, you see that trouble, just be like, your mom's safe, you know? There's nothing to do about the fact that he knows his mother at this point and that he's so old. It's like, ignoring it and trying to treat it like every other problem is not the way to handle it. It's like its own unique thing. But I don't know. I wonder if Qui-Gon would have been like...
Oh, I think he would have if he could use mind trick on Watto's species, but like, you can't on Watto's species.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. Like...
It's so hard too, because we're talking about a matter of days, right? Not even between, Anakin being freed and everything else happening and Qui-Gon dying. And it's easy to Monday morning quarterback. There's part of it of like, yes, I feel like Qui-Gon would have closed the book on that after, like, because in his mind, he's just like, she's safe. I mean, she's a slave, but she's not in imminent danger. She has, you know, she has a roof over her head. She has food. This is something I can wait till next week.
Right.
You know, like while we're trying to solve this. But it's hard to say because he doesn't, he never comments on it. There's nothing there. We're just putting our opinions and thoughts on the Qui-Gon.
But this book makes me feel like
we're talking about.
But at least he's out in the Outer Rim actually seeing atrocities like slavery taking place and trying to make a difference to the least, the smallest increment, which is just get Anakin out and then hopefully go back and get the mom later. But obviously, like, the council are not doing this. Like, a lot of Jedi are not sent on missions to go disrupt this sort of activity.
Because it's all run by the Senate.
Qui-Gon's actually a disruptor in that way. And so I think, like, I don't want to over, I don't want to, like, you know, not take that into consideration.
No, I mean, I'll definitely give him a pass for the, you know, for in, you know, Phantom Menace, you know, like, he couldn't do it in that moment. There was more urgent things to deal with. But yeah, I guess my thought is just that, like, I think this book makes me feel certain that he would have gone back and helped freed Anakin's mother, like, if he could.
Yeah. And this book explores that deeper. I don't know, Ben, if you got to Zelastra's kind of major reason why she wants to kill all the Jedi.
I did. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah,
they talk about the fact that, and this is something that I love and interested in, is that, like, basically a Jedi master came.
Hold on. You love this because if more and more I think about this, and the more I get older as a Star Wars fan, I'm just like, there are a couple things in Star Wars that just stick in my craw that I'm just like, this just doesn't, it would make sense if it was this instead. And it's just, and this is one of those things, Adam, this Jedi that you're about to mention is one of those things where I'm like, this should not be a Jedi. This should be a pseudonym or a person who is.
Oh, no. I mean, it's like, it's just literally wrote
an actual Jedi, but anyways.
No, it's ridiculous that I like the idea. I don't like the Jedi that did it. I mean, again, it's just because Lucas misspelled Sidious in a document, and then they're like, okay, and then those layers like, no, we'll just pretend Sifo-Dyas is actually something other than Sidious. It was always supposed to be Sidious, and then Lucas does the Lucas thing as, and we'll change it. I always knew it anyway, but so later on, I don't know if you got to this point, but it is Sifo-Dyas who came And because, and when the Jedi Council finds out, when Zelastra mentions Sifo-Dyas to the Jedi Council, there's like, there's a moment where it's like, there's gasps and like inhale, because basically, apparently Sifo-Dyas was known for basically just taking the kids immediately, not solving any of the issues surrounding it, and just kidnapping. He was kidnapping kids, and they're like, oh, we talked to him about it, and then he left the Jedi Order. No, he was kidnapping children. Like,
there's something
frustrated. Yeah. Like, at the second that reveal happened, I'm like, you all deserved Order 66, dudes. Like, that's how you solve it. That's like, that is some Catholic Church BS about how we dealt with our issues.
But isn't
talk to him and transfer him to another temple?
Sort of the crazy character, like the sort of like lunatic having like visions of
doom, absolutely.
Of a great doom, like a prophet sort of character who's just murmuring about a doom that's coming, and then he just wants to surge the numbers of the Jedi Order.
Yeah, that's like exactly why
the darkness, like, that is coming. 100%. Essentially,
like,
it's
he
kind
wasn't...
of what you feel about this character, and so like
it's
just the guy who went to Quen or whatever, and then left, and like Zelastra, or was it? I don't know where that.
Well, I don't remember where it was, Quen, but it was around that area. But kidnapped her friends.
Like,
did he just show
up and start murmuring about a doom and then leave? Like, you would just be like terrified
like
of the Jedi after me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you almost are like you sympathize, and they do a good job of saying like, yes, that's horrible that it happened. That does not justify all of the evil things you just did and all the people that you killed. And my favorite reaction is to her. When they tell her about Sifo-Dyas, she's like, is that supposed to make it better? That makes it worse. And I'm like, that's the exact right reaction. Like, I love that there's not like a happy moment at the end where she's just like, oh, I totally get it. And they're like, oh, we totally messed up. It was kind of like, no, they're still like that is a trauma that is so deep that you're not going to get through it from a like, oh, yeah, no, he was bad and he was mistaken and maybe a little bit psychotic and we, you know, stopped him. We took him off that assignment. They literally told him, like, we no longer allowed him to get younglings. I'm like, cool. Maybe you should put him in prison. Put him in prison.
I know. There's no stories like that where it's just like, you know, like, we got to put this one down. Like in the Jedi Council, like
I thought it would be so much more interesting if it was like Sifo Dyas was Palpatine moving around in robes, acting like a Jedi, taking artifacts from places. 100%. I thought that would be just a far more interesting thing that's going on, and then leaves no trace sort of person that's like an endless mystery. Like that to me, that's just so interesting if that was the situation. But instead, it's like
shocking.
This, they covered up this sort of head case Jedi. That it's just like this weird storyline. I don't get it.
Really. Sifo Dyas's like stories just keep getting weirder.
It's just weird. It's just, like I just don't.
The Clone Wars thing didn't really make much sense. It was like, okay, he's crazy, and then now this, and then like,
They need to like retcon it again. They used to go back, erase those episodes of Clone Wars, and just be like, no, it was actually Sidious. Because like, it's still every time I realize it's not Sidious, the Sifo Dyas, I'm like, it just makes no sense. It would have been amazing to be him doing this. This book also would have been amazing. I mean, Ari is amazing, but it would have been at the end if she said it was Sifo Dyas, and they're all just like, that's not a thing. So like, who stole your like? What if like Sidious was just going around stealing? Like force kids, right, to try to figure out apprentices, and then they're like, now there's this mystery of just like that wasn't us. Like, who? I don't know who stole your friends. Like, that would have been an interesting little like cliffhanger. Dun, 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 and then like you know, anyway. But no, it was a Jedi. It was an evil Jedi.
Can we go over Easter eggs now?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
All right, Avar Chris gets a mention, which is very cool.
Yep.
Super cool. We have a young Maximilian Veers.
Yes.
Yeah. Lots of Veers.
I love that.
One of my favorite lines is his commander says, "Yeah, with a name like Veers, it's not surprising he doesn't fly straight."
But I'm ching.
So funny.
Yeah.
Obviously Sifo Dyas, we covered that. Sabacc or Riftwalker.
Yeah.
On the planet Dalnus. Does Sabacc have another name on another planet?
Pazak?
Oh yeah, is it Pazak?
Well, that was the name from the game, right? That was an early
from the game
Lucasfilm name for it.
Yeah,
and then it became Sabacc. But one of the three idiots calls it Pazak as a little nod.
It's a little like nod.
Yeah, she's like, no, never call it that. And that was it.
What else we got? We got Rendili Hyperworks gets a lot of mentions. What else do we have here? Sinar IPv1.
Okay.
That's Sinar Fleet Systems.
Yep.
We know they designed the what is it, the TIE Fighter or the X-Wing, right?
I think they did the
X-Wing. It's the TIE Fighter.
Then Sorosub made the X-Wing.
Right, Sorosub.
They do most of the
I believe that
Alliance forces there from Sullust.
What else we have here? Igralamites. That was a great scene. I guess that's not an Easter egg, but that was just cool.
I wanted to ask.
I guess that's pretty much it for my Easter eggs. Did you guys have any that you caught, like sort of connected?
No, I mean, other than like making Zalastra like Joker coded,
right?
Especially with her obsession with the Fools, the Fools card. In the deck where, like, apparently, I don't think it's this point, Ben, but like, apparently, when she killed that Jedi, the Jedi apprentice, she shoved a Fool's card in his mouth. Like, the Jedi found him with a Fool's card in his mouth. I'm like, that is, again, for a book that starts out fairly comical, like that, like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon stopping a hostage situation without ever having to use a weapon. Like these three idiots that keep showing up throughout the entire book, which is like one of my favorite running gags, to then have this like this nihilistic killer. Yeah. It's like really dark. It really goes totally shifting in a good way. But definitely some like Joker vibes.
You're with, right. The like Zalastra. Three idiots are Gore, Wungo, and the Lobber. I like the Lobber.
Wungo,
the Lobber,
and Lobber.
The Lobber.
Yeah, those guys.
Yeah, the lobber is the only one for grenades.
Because he throws grenades. The voice acting for those three was hilarious.
It's so good.
They're great. I don't think I have too many other things. The one thing that kept popping in my head because we just read it was Plagueis. and because and it overlaps time, but it's not canon. And so I was just like wondering if they might, if Miller might sort of canonize some of those things. And I was thinking about that dude, the Padawan that died, Zanin, something like that.
Zarin Rel.
Yeah. And I was just like, oh, remember there was like, there was a Jedi who died in some early like skirmishes with pirates. Cause like, this is when Plagueis and Palpatine are like mobilizing the, some of the pirate activity and the getting the Hutts involved. And they were like taking over companies. And I was just like wondering if that was like something that, you know, if these people were sort of tied up in that. Because I guess we know who killed Zane and
maybe
Meow or whatever. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just trying to think of any other things that, I mean, obviously there's the Sifo Dyas overlap, though he was pretty, you know, we saw him in of sound mind in Plagueis, but, you know, it was laying the seeds for him to be the one to do a bunch of bad things. So I don't know. There's that. Anything else? Did you guys think about that book at all?
I think that there's definitely some puppeting happening in the underworld by Palpatine.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, I love cutting to Finis Valorum and Palpatine sort of side by side chatting with the council. The Hafernian boot scene early on was
a good bit.
So funny. And there was all these sort of subtext in that scene of Palpatine loving the red.
Yeah, the red.
Wanting to paint his office red. I was just like, okay. Red flag. How about that?
Yeah. You just wear a red flag all the time. Yeah, it was weird that Palpatine was even there because he's just a senator. I mean, I know he's ahead of some committees.
Yeah, I didn't get that. I was like, why does Valorum want him around all the time?
So they do a bit with him at the end, which with Palpatine, which we can talk a little bit, but I like it because that felt like, yeah, that makes more sense. But that opening stuff, it just felt like fan servicey, to be honest, in a book that didn't have a ton of it, where it just felt like we have to get. Especially because Palpatine makes a return appearance at the end of the book, so they had to think, they kind of had to find a way to introduce him at the beginning, but it felt, I agree, I was just like, I don't seem like Palpatine would be involved with this at this, I don't know, it felt odd.
Yeah, I mean, the whole story is ludicrous. I mean, it's like the Jedi Council felt sad, so they put on a play, and like, that's the story, but it's like, fascinating. Like, the blow-by-blow through all of it is like, kind of amazing.
Right.
Yeah, it's like it's the thinnest of thinnest plots in a lot of ways, and I don't mind that in terms of like I was really reading this and going like, what's the like, what are the stakes?
It was like you're trading the Nile for the vial. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Literally, when they mentioned the Vial, I'm like, did the Nihil lose
a letter?
Did they? There was like a splinter group that turned to the Vial.
There was like a storm, like, a pirate invasion that like stopped.
It's funny for a book that I think did such a good job of like really, if you're any of the listeners and watchers are interested in the Jedi Council, like read this book, like you will know. Like I just cannot wait to watch like episode one again to just like they're all my guys.
They all are.
Like I remember their little like that little like all those little side quests. That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. This is like a book of reading. Like if you're playing a video game, this is a book of all the side quests. Like the really main line. Like
there's some great side quests. Like, oh my goodness.
There's some
like,
amazing side quests are usually my favorite part of any video game. So I was gonna say though, John Jackson Miller, this is the first time he's written a book since A New Dawn. So this is like almost a decade since he's written a book in Star Wars, which is wild because he's like he wrote Kenobi. Like he to me is like one of the like Mount Rushmore of like old EU, like really wrote so many of the comics and the other stuff. And he pushed to have that. If you're in Gramps, you're curious. He pushed to have the map in the book.
Yeah.
Because he loves maps and the new publishing was just like, we don't really do maps anymore. We don't really need them. He's like, but I made one. And they're like, okay, fine. You can put it in your map in your beginning of the book.
Well, you got to show like, you know, like the taxi service going around to the different islands. Like it has to feel.
I I always look at a map. I'm not a big go back to the map person in fantasies, but to me, a fantasy book is not a fantasy book without a map at the beginning. Like every fantasy book needs a map.
I think it's a little criminal to have just the local map and not like I need almost like not the galaxy map, but just a slice or something too.
No,
like
agreed.
I need the extra page of like
100%
galactic stuff to, you know, like as well as the local.
You almost always get that in a fantasy book, right? You usually get the world map or like the larger map,
exactly.
And then one or two smaller.
I think we need one more map. If we're gonna do one, I think we need another.
I was involved in Lucasfilm or Star Wars publishing, the first thing I do is like every book you get a relevant like galactic map or a relevant like space like
the
map,
sectors, whatever,
and then one planet, like sector map. There you go, exactly, a sector map. But I'm like, we have to just get to the point where we accept that Star Wars is fantasy, not sci-fi. Can we just come to that acceptance and start treating it as fantasy and give us our freaking?
They do the timeline. Thank you, Adam. I preach, both of you. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. They do give us the timeline, which is a weird sort of turn on that. It's just sort of like, okay, this is where you are, in the galaxy, you know, in the timeline, which is helpful in Star Wars
timeline,
to know when you are, for some context there. But I love the map. Flipping back and forth with a Kindle is not easy, so I like tried to commit it to memory.
No,
I didn't really need to flip back, and I was reading the physical book, and it was I kind of noted the map at the start and saw where the islands are placed and sort of, you know, where the capital key spaceport is or where the Galaxy Arena is, and was just like, okay, let's go, you know, and like just kind of.
I just went, oh, map, that makes me feel good. Didn't look at it very closely and went, never going to check it out again. But I love that it's there. It should be there.
I guess we should really cross into the spoiler zone and talk about the Palpatine stuff. Adam, you want to go first? Because I want to address a larger philosophical thing I think is tied to that statement from Palpatine.
So basically kind of the big reveal, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I was, again, listening to this while I was doing dishes last night. I can't remember what I was listening to, but Palpatine basically was in connection with the keeper of the Jedi Temple, right? Who is basically funneling artifacts.
Yeah. Vo?
To Palps. Yeah, Vo. And so there's a moment at towards the end where Vo blows up at, is it Mace? I can't remember who he blows up at.
Eeth Koth was the one that was looking for his stuff.
Yeah, but at the end of this book, the Jedi Temple is destroyed, and they're like, we're not rebuilding it, but we're going to create this amazing monument that all of the people have access to. So we will always be here. Like, we will always be with you. And Vo is just like, dude, my job. Like, it really like reacts negatively. Like, but you just like, you didn't talk to me and really seemed upset. And it kind of seemed, it was an interesting moment where you're just like, this weird guy is like, okay, I get it. And even the Jedi Council are like, sorry, dude, we can still work here. He's like, oh, I don't want to work. He's like, storms off. And then you find out later it's because he's basically just been funneling artifacts to Palpatine. And he's like afraid to die. He's just like, no, I think I can get a job at a placement at a different Jedi Temple and maybe in a couple of years start funneling you more stuff. And he starts. And then the most amazing moment is Palpatine just starts just talking monologue.
Yes.
Just monologue. All right. Just monologuing about it's like a monologue out of a Bond movie where he's basically just talking about all of his plans and aspirations. He's like, talking to me? What are you saying?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very plain. He's like, what are you saying? Why are you talking? He's like, I'm not talking to you. And then turns around and guess who's behind him? Oh. No, not Plagueis.
Masa Maeda?
Who else would be around behind
him? No,
Dooku.
No. He has a double saber, lightsaber.
Oh, yeah.
Maul's behind him. Turns around, the Maul's behind him. So it's very much a solo reveal at the end of the book. But it's a good Palpatine moment.
I want to talk about that. He is monologuing about how he does allude to the fact that he's been sort of pushing the Jedi to be more and more flooded by the bureaucracy core and sort of political matter,
shutting down,
solving crime rates on Outer Rim worlds and spreading them apart. And I think like the Clone Wars was the ultimate solution for Palpatine, because he knew that, and what we see in the prequels obviously is that the Jedi are all just alone. They're commanding their clone troops alone.
Yeah.
They're not doubled up. They're not paired together like they were in this book, essentially. And so
it seemed to be like this was Palpatine's biggest fear, is to have all of the Jedi together. Sorry.
So it's very Plagueis.
Yeah.
Were you guys holding out on me? This is like, that's the book that happens like in the book Plagueis.
Yeah.
He basically talks about all that stuff about spreading them out.
Yeah.
Like thin out, yeah. setting yeah. them out. Like, don't let them be together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does a good job of just like, if you're just watching the movies, you're like, so trade dispute, war. Yeah. like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. it's a little like, clones, war. And this does a good, better job of saying like, no, like the trade dispute was one minor, like what, the more I'm thinking about this is just like episode one is just one of his many, many little plans.
Yeah.
And the only thing that makes it bigger is that they run into right. Anakin Skywalker. Yeah. They find Anakin Skywalker yeah. and that's why it's a big deal. It's not because there's a trade dispute on Naboo, but because like they discover
right.
the
it's
chosen
the proverbial
one.
Straw that broke the Dubak's back. Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well done.
Yeah. No, it's just one of the political escalations, right, that Palpatine's probably devised and that the Jedi have to go answer. And he's doing that all over the galaxy in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the Plagueis obviously gets at this too. And just the idea of sort of the them having to go deal with this these extraneous threats everywhere is it's going to be tough for them to hold council, right? Even in the beginning of this book, we see how tough it is for them just to gather. I was like, can you guys just gather? You're always on away missions. Like, Palpatine must already be at work at this point.
I know.
That's so real to me, though. I feel like, who can't relate to that? Where it's just like, just let me do my stupid job and like, you know, another meeting. Like, I don't have time for meetings. Like, I feel like everyone can relate to that.
No, I did feel that too. I did feel that. And, I was like, they do not like to meet.
That's why it was so refreshing when like Mace is like, we're going on a field trip. I'm like, oh yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Mace was like, we need a field trip. We need a refresher.
I can weirdly relate to this because it's like, my day job, I'm part of a faculty member at a college. And so we have like monthly department meetings and pre-COVID, obviously it was in person, but then it was just like half the people weren't able to make it. Now it's just like all, I feel like we're all just like hologramming in for the Jedi Council, like every Wednesday that we do it. And at the end of the year, I'm like, oh, I can finally plan the retreat. And I'm like, we're going to meet at Trillium Brewing. And I'm like, we're going on an away mission. like finally, like it's like been a year.
You pull a Windu.
Like I ran to a faculty member. I'm like, I literally have not seen your face in person since last year, even though I see you every month. Like it's just wild. So yeah. Definitely need in person is important for the Jedi Council.
Stuff gets done when they're all together. It was just really fun to trace all their like sort of adventures together and how that they each, you know, reacted. And yeah, it was fun. It was, I don't know. It's a fun ride. I think I'm, like I said before the pod, I've just been like, I needed a nice long, like Star Wars to sink my teeth into. And
yes.
Yeah, what a great book, man. It was just nice to be in the galaxy far, far away with all these like main headline characters.
This felt like the most old EU book I think I've read in the new EU in a way, because like they played with big people. Like the fact that you literally all members of the Jedi Council had issues, that you had so much Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, that you even touched on Palpatine and Maul, like all this stuff was in play. And it, again, didn't change a lot of what happened, but to tell this kind of deep of a story, ton of Yaddle too. Like, we haven't talked about Yaddle. You don't have to, but a lot of Yaddle. Yeah. There's a moment where one of the pirates, because Yoda walks up to speak to the microphone, and one of them looks at the other and goes, there's another one? And then looks between Yaddle and Yoda. It's a nice little moment of just like
real talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice to get John Jackson Miller on this thing again. Like, great voice, great Star Wars voice. And it's like, it's real.
There's also like vacation vibes to this book, and it's cozy vibes to this book. Like, there's a
very cozy
level coziness
very cozy
to the beginning of the book, basically, where like Opo Rancisis surprises Seneschal Vo, like that they're arriving to celebrate, and like you feel like, let's prepare for a party. And then but it's like, it's kind of a tropical vacation kind of at the same time, where it's like, it feels like, well, I don't know if it's tropical there exactly for the climate, but it's like, it does feel like an island sort of vacation destination type, you know, a setting for the Jedi Council to all, you know, gather and celebrate in an arena and at the Sanctuary Mount and stuff like that. So
I know. Can't you just see like Ki Adi Mundi in a Hawaiian shirt with his like flavorless ice just walking around?
Yeah,
looking at stuff?
Yeah. I was like, these are my guys.
They're both wearing Crocs and they're just like, are they on vacation? It's a funny, that was a funny picture they painted of them. All right.
Pretty much most of my notes here. I don't have much else to say other than fantastic read. I hope everyone reads that. That's The Living Force by John Jackson Miller. Any other Star Wars topics to cover today?
I think we did it, y'all.
I think,
yeah.
I think.
What's up for next week? Are we going to do a little Bad Batch, obviously? Any comics? I'm jonesing for some comics.
Yeah, yeah, Bad Batch.
Wait, Mace Windu hit number 3.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, I think that that's got one more to go. There's definitely I should have had the thing open. There's definitely some High Republic comics. So I think the main run Marvel series, there is the first half, I think, is done. So we can read that. I think we already covered book one, but we can kind of cover the entire first one. And there's a standalone book as well. But as always happens, Wikipedia is broke my computer.
That's
so
okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot
No. I will say this every week because I want Wikipedia to fix it. That I'm like, I just want to give them bad press. You're a great product. You have so much stuff on your thing. That's
there's a Wikipedia.
I gotta restart my computer every time.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, there we go. All right.
But
so let's. It's just ridiculous. Okay, so. We got Mace Windu and Jango Fett ongoing. They're going to be done in a few months. We have the High Republic Children of the Storm arc that we can do. And we have the High Republic Crash Landing, which is a one shot. It's a High Republic, maybe High Republic Adventures Crash Landing. I have to double check, but it's definitely a one shot we could read. So there's that plus High Republic. And then the other two ongoing is Vader and Star Wars, but we're still in the middle of the Rise of the Schism. And the Trial of Lando Calrissian. So those have a couple more issues to go, I think. But we could definitely do. Let's do both. Yeah.
And it's been interesting. I can't wait to talk.
Nice.
I concur. So why don't we do Bad Batch and then the High Republic main run first series. Offline, I'll tell you all the exact issues. And then the High Republic Crash
Sounds
Landing.
Sounds good. Love it.
Does that sound good?
All right, Joe.
Okay, you have your homework.
Now we do our homework. All right, awesome. Thanks, everyone. So great to have another pod with you. We'll be back next week for another edition of
Cantina Chronicles.